Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 117. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in again for my co-host, David Todd, who usually takes a little hiatus at this time of the offseason, is the great Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Dave. McLumen is getting inspected this afternoon, so if you could all say some prayers, that'd be appreciated.
Yeah, and Alex, hopefully you'll be able to tell he has a new $100 set of headset that he's debuting today. So
all that mowing lawn money.
Right. All that collecting the Coke bottles, you know.
Yeah.
That's something you never had to do, is it? Collect Coke bottles.
I barely know what you're talking about, let alone actually doing it.
We used to, as kids, you know, they used to sell the Cokes in glass Coke bottles. And it used to be, I think, a nickel a bottle you retrieve. So instead of, you know, running around getting cans, you used to run around scavenging for empty Coke bottles and take those up to find six of them in an afternoon. It was huge, and go up and get you about 30, 45 cents or whatever you could get from the store for that, then turn around, buy a couple packs of baseball cards. So I know that's foreign to you.
Do you have a milkman?
No, milkman, no diaper service or anything like that. But I'll tell you what, there were no such things. I didn't wear any Pampers or anything like that as a baby. It was the old cloth diaper and safety pin with me. And boy, there are some days at the age of 50 where I wonder if I'm close to going back to those.
Hopefully not for at least 10 years.
I hear you. My wife always calls me a big baby anyway. All right. Listeners, be prepared. We're going to give you 1 hour of talking about Ben Roethlisberger being ranked 18th overall on the NFL Network Top 100 show. No, not really.
This is where I step out. You can handle that.
But that's as good as a place as any to start here. First time, believe it or not, you know, since its inception of this, boy, it's hard to believe it's been going on as many years as it has been going on. But this is the first year Ben has ever cracked the top 20. The last 3 years, I think he's been right there, 21 or 22, 21 and 26 or something like that. It's meaningless. It's an off-season discussion piece. You know, I don't even think they do the wrap-up show after each episode anymore, probably because people, for the most part, kind of tune that thing out. But, you know, that sounds about right with Roethlisberger, right? About 18th overall?
Yeah, no, I think that's good. We'll see what other quarterbacks are ahead of him. I'm sure the usual suspects, Rodgers, Brady, et cetera. But, yeah, it's good to see him get a little love.
I think it's going to be, obviously Brady. I don't think I saw Aaron Rodgers' name on the list yet, but didn't Aaron Rodgers miss a lot of games with...
He missed like half the year at least, but I mean, he's still Aaron Rodgers.
Right. I think Drew Brees, and I don't think I saw Russell Wilson's name yet. So, okay. Look, Russell Wilson's a good quarterback. Is he a better quarterback than Ben?
I look at what Wilson's working with or what he's not working with that offensive line. You know, if Ben was behind that line, he'd be dead right now. He'd be retired. So.
Right. That's a good point there. Breeze, I mean, look, Breeze puts, you know, Breeze has phenomenal seasons every year, so I don't take so much issue with that. He's a good quarterback as well, too. So I would assume that Ben's going to be the fourth fourth highest rated quarterback on this year's list. Obviously, Ben is now the fourth player on that list. Previously, we've had Ryan Shazier, or Cameron Hayward, Ryan Shazier, and David DeCastro, and one can easily assume that Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown will be in the top 10 that on the show finale here. Marquise Pouncey not in the top 100. Surprised by that, or?
I mean, I think he should be in the top 100, but as an offensive lineman that, you know, has had some injuries, it makes him a little easier to forget about. That's kind of how it goes for a list like this. You know, I was surprised DeCastro was ranked as high as he was. I was glad to see it, but I was surprised to see him comfortably crack the top 50. So, I mean, Pouncey should be on there, but, you know, linemen, it can be hard for them to kind of get that name out sometimes.
Yeah, Marcus Gilbert with the games he's missed. Yeah, there's, you know, you go back a couple years ago, was probably Marcus Gilbert's best chance at cracking anything, you know, the Pro Bowl, you know, top 100, what have you. And you know, I wrote about him just recently. You know, this is going to be a big season, or it's going to be a season that'll decide a lot, probably what happens with him past this year, because, you know, he would probably be due for a contract extension next offseason and all like that. And now that they have Chooks in the fold there, you know, you have an out if he can't stay healthy and on the field. And really, that's been the biggest knock on Gilbert overall, because, look, he looks phenomenal right now. I mean, for his age and all, I mean, the shape that his body's been in for the last couple of years, the way he moves, when he's on the field, he's one of the top right tackles in the league. The question is can he, hold off these nagging injuries and all that usually seem to cost him a couple of games every year?
Yeah, last year definitely a disappointing season. So he wasn't going to get top 100 a couple of years ago when he was at, you know, height of his career. Certainly not going to get it now. But yeah, I still have confidence. I mean, you still have confidence in Gilbert as an on-field product, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, if that entire offensive line stays healthy this year, I mean, look out, right? I mean, because you know, who is the weakest link?
Well, I was asked to rank the five linemen on my mailbag last Thursday. I put Villanueva last, and the biggest issue I have with him is just he's a notoriously slow starter. I don't know exactly what the issue is, but every year, the first 3 to 4 weeks, he just gets off to a really tough start, and I think he's probably the most inconsistent lineman of the five.
And that's understandable with his background, right?
Well, I mean, at this point, you know, I think...
there's no more excuses with him. He's been there enough now.
Yeah. Well, I'd even use last year. I don't think I'd make much of an excuse of it last year. And I mean, it's probably... Most people, it's going to come down to either Villanueva or Foster. I don't know where you come in on that.
Man, I mean, Foster's just so damn consistent, you know? Mm-hmm. You roll him out there and you know what he's going to get. I mean, he's not... Obviously, he's not great out in space. You know, look, I mean, he proved, you know, a few of us wrong a couple years ago with his ability to pull to the right. Even so, that's not something I want to see, as much as DeCastro does the other way. But he proved he could do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, when you're double teaming and kind of zone and releasing blocking, you know, you kind of cringe a few times when Foster's the one has to go out and go get the linebacker, you know. But, I mean, pass protection-wise, I mean, is there anybody more consistent on the line than he is?
No, he's underrated in his pass protection. I think he kind of gets knocked on it because he's not a super athlete. But, you know, Mike Munchak has said, you know, Foster's such a big guy at 340 pounds. It's just hard for guys to get around him. I mean, he can be beat, but you got to do it quick. You got to do it cleanly, because if you give Foster any window, he's going to use his size. He's going to be able to stay square to you. So that's where he wins in pass protection, because he's the biggest guy on the line by a wide margin. I mean, outside of Villanueva, but, you know, in terms of like weight and actual kind of width, you know, Foster's the biggest guy, and he's just a pain to get around.
Do you think this, what are the odds this is Foster's last year?
That's a good question. I mean, have you seen a drop off in play? I really haven't. I'm waiting for it to happen, but I haven't seen it happen. So if it continues to be steady, I mean, I know they like Finney. You know, he's viewed as the heir, but that could be a tough situation.
You know, I haven't seen the drop, you know, a huge drop-off in his play. But, I mean, he is a guy that you could probably pencil in to miss a couple of games this season, too, right?
How many has he really missed, though? I mean, the odd one.
A couple a year, it seems like, right? Do you have his games?
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up now. Let's see. The last 2 years, he's played 14 games. 2015, he played all 16. So, yeah, I mean, you know, one or two, but I think it's all minor stuff.
And his contract-wise, I'm trying to get to that right now, but I mean...
his contract's cheap, so he's going to be cheap again, I assume.
Right. He will be cheap. Look, I mean, he took less than even what I thought he, I had him pegged a little bit higher on this last contract. 2018, he's currently in the final year of his contract now. You know, 2.67 million. This is a guy that you let hit free agency, though, right? You're not signing him this offseason. You're not extending him this offseason.
No, not at all. If you do anything, it'll be after 2018, you know. So, yeah, it's not happening before camp or anything like that.
Right. I mean, this is a guy you let play out this year, and then much sure. like his the last time, you know, I believe that happened. They let his contract expire and then worked with him before free agency and got him signed. Mm-hmm. Or right there. I can't remember. Was that did he sign?
3 years ago.
But did he sign right before the start of free agency, or did he sign right after the start of free agency?
I think it was right before. I can look that up, too. Yeah. But he's been really durable. Since 2011, he's played in every season since 2011, he's played in at least 14 games. So, I mean, that's for lineman, that's really good.
He's already 32, so, right. You know, let me put it to you this way. He can't afford to miss any games this year.
Sure. Because more time for Finney's, worse chance for Foster to stay.
Right. Went kind of down a rabbit hole. I didn't expect us to go down for stemming off of Roethlisberger there. Let's go back to Roethlisberger and something that I do want to talk about today. And Ben held his annual youth camp over the weekend on Father's Day. Was out there on Father's Day, you know, throwing passes to the little kids and helping them out. And that's always great to see. I was surprised they were able to get some meaningful quotes out of him. And I think Jeremy Fowler was the one to do so out of ESPN. Asked him about his contract and all. And I'm going to read the quotes here to you that Ben said that he isn't concerned about landing a record-breaking contract. I care about record-breaking Super Bowl wins. And things like that. That's more important to me. Later on in the segment there, he talks about, let's see, he says, I have 2 years on my contract. I'm not going to be one to sit here and worry about my contract. That's not my job. My job is to play football. I'll let my representation, the Steelers, worry about all that stuff. To me, it's all about going out and playing now. I think there are a lot more, maybe a lot more important people who need to get their deals done now. For me to do it 2 years out, if it doesn't make sense for the team, I'm not going to sit here and worry about it. And what else did he have to say? I know in 2 years, Marquise Pouncey and Marcus Gilbert, there are other very important guys up that I hope get taken care of. Because if they aren't here, I'm not here. That's the way it is. They are that good. Really, look, I like the way he answered the questions. Obviously, I mean, they're, you know, as far as him not being concerned about his contract right now, he shouldn't be. He probably wasn't overly surprised that this, you know, being 2 years out, he did not get a new contract done. I'm not surprised about that. I think here's the thing that I think bothers me the most about this article and this set of quotes. It's how it's being interpreted by other people. You know, people are interpreting this as he's going to be willing to take less money on his next deal in order to get his lineman signed. Is that the way you are interpreting this?
Not really. I mean, it sounds good, but he's going to get, you know, market value is my expectation.
Right. I mean, and I know people are going to say, well, look at all the money he's made, you know, throughout his career. I mean, it shouldn't be about money right now. It should be about winning championships, yada, yada. Well, look, these guys, he's currently they've got a bargain on him right now. I mean, it's just how quick that this quarterback market changes. His deal that he's finishing out right now, when you look at the new money perspective and the breakdown, breaks down to just a little less than $22 million. All right, there are 12 quarterbacks technically making more than him right now. Matt Ryan, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, Matt Stafford, Derek Carr, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck, Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson. Okay, now who is likely to get a new deal soon? Aaron Rodgers probably is the one that everybody's talking about, and he's going to be the one. One would think has the best chance at eclipsing Matt Ryan in his $30 million. So the $30 million threshold is upon us, and it's going to go, obviously going to go up from there. So assuming, you're not expecting Ben to have a new deal done between now and the start of training camp, right?
No, I don't think it's going to happen this year. It hasn't happened already, and I think Ben's okay with that, one, because he said it, and two, the longer he waits, the more the quarterback market explodes, the more money it's going to be in his pocket eventually. So, if you're a quarterback, wait it out as long as you can instead of trying to get the deal done early, because you're going to get more money.
Right, and, Kevin, and this kind of all stems back, sometimes I get accused of wearing the tinfoil hat.
I'm about to accuse you, because I know where you're going with this, Dave.
Look, I do have that chin strap on that thing buckled, I'm gonna get two chin straps on it pretty soon. But this stems a lot from going all the way back to what Kevin Colbert said during an interview with Mike Florio earlier in the offseason at the owners' meetings. And you could read him at that time, and I did, I believe, in a couple of different posts, read in between the lines that Colbert saying, we'll see what happens after the draft as far as Ben's contract goes and yada, yada. That's where I started to put the pieces together that, look, I firmly believe that Ben's not going to get a contract extension this offseason. And I think there's a legitimate chance that they could draft a quarterback in the early rounds this year. Now, Colbert, during that same interview, I wish I had the quote up in front of me, he said something about, it's all kind of relative there. The quarterback market is what the quarterback market is, that kind of thing. But, within that, I guess this goes back to people trying to say that Ben's willing to take less money. Is there any ounce, is there any bone in your body that thinks Ben, assuming... and look, make no bones about it. If a deal is going to get done with Roethlisberger, it's probably going to be by the fifth day of the new league year next offseason in March, correct?
Yeah, I mean, this stuff better than I do, but I think that's fair to say.
Because, he's got another $5 million roster bonus due at that time. It would make sense, to roll that thing up with another signing bonus and yada, yada. Just get him done and out of the way during the offseason. That's been the MO. Now, does that prevent the Steelers from going the rest of the summer? Pay him the $5 million roster bonus, and then going on through the rest of the summer, and then, right before, the start of the regular season, getting a deal done with him? No. Nothing says they can't do it. But one would think, when it comes to him and his contracts, that if they were going to get a deal done after this season, it would be before, free agency starts next year. Now, with that, let's assume that such a deal gets done then. You're expecting that to be over the $30 million a year average, right?
Yeah, I would say right around 30, if I had to guess.
All right, so why are these people... why are people interpreting his quotes as him going to take a hometown discount? I mean, even our buddy Joel Corey, I think, put something on Twitter.
He's talking about the Brees, comparing that to the Brees situation.
Talking about that, and I just don't see it. I mean, and look, if he wins a Super Bowl this year or gets them back to the playoffs, another, AFC championship run, if he stays healthy, he should ask for and he should get, you know, top money. So I just don't understand where all this talk comes from about him taking a discount to sign these. Look, you find a way to keep your best players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, maybe we're wrong. I mean, we'll find out because I think the deal is going to get done. That's another discussion we can go a little bit deeper into. But, I just think it's going to take market value.
And that's where I'm going from here is no way am I going to guarantee that. I'm just saying the writing is on the wall for him not getting a deal done next offseason and then basically going year by year with him. You know, because you could franchise you if you don't sign him to a new deal by the start of the new league year in March in 2019, you're probably, you know, I'm willing to bet that they don't get a deal done with him after that, you know, the rest of the offseason. And then that means he would play out his final year of his contract in 2019 and go into the offseason without a contract. And at that point, what's wrong with franchising him? Because what, you know, franchise tag number is going to be by then probably right at $30 million anyway. So why not tagging that year? And then of course, if you the back to back tags come with that, you know, percent increase and all like that, he's not going to lose out here in any kind of money. But you know, kind of reading between the lines, previous conversations you and I have had off the air, you don't think that's the right approach to take with him. You know, going back to back franchise tags with him, you think it's disrespectful, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that I don't agree that it's the right approach, and I think honestly, Dave, there's 0% chance they do that route. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'll own it, but I think there's no way they're going to franchise, you know, Ben, because it's just a process for me. Franchise tag is when you're desperate, you can't get together on money, you value the player differently than the player values himself, like we're seeing with Le'Veon Bell. You know, it's just a bad kind of, you know, relationship thing where it says your two sides aren't communicating well enough and aren't able to get a deal done. So, I mean, we know what Ben's worth is. The Steelers are very unlikely going to disagree heavily with Ben's value and worth. If Ben says I'm worth $30.5 million per year, it's hard to disagree with that. So why not, even if it is just – because if Ben gets an extension, I don't believe it's going to be this 3 or 4 year kind of mega deal. I think they are going to essentially start going year by year in the contract. But why not just do a – you know, 1 or 2 year, you know, for $30 million a year, because you know what that number is going to be anyway. So I think it's just the process of it that would hurt the relationship. And I mean, just how often do you see these quarterbacks get tagged like that? It just never happens.
Yeah, I think the thing here is, though, is the cash outlay, because, you know, generally you're paying them a signing bonus in the first year, and that together in the first year of the deal really, you know, it is a bigger number than the actual average yearly value of the contract. Make sense?
Okay, yeah, I'm following.
Okay, so, you know, that makes it a little bit tougher because you have to also stretch that signing bonus out, you know, on mm-hmm. on top of sure. it. So with him at his age, I don't see it – personally, I don't see it being disrespectful at all. And he's going to get, you know – he's still going to get his money. He's still going to get the sixty. I don't know. Let's call it $65 million over, you know, the last 2 years. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's still going to get that as long as he's playing well, and you still accomplish the goal of him playing 4 more years. Talking from this season on, you know. So I don't know. Look, it's going to be and look, I know people are going to say, well, how does Mason Rudolph play into all this? He doesn't.
Exactly. I'm with you there.
He really doesn't. This is not an either or. And I believe the Steelers, when they said Kevin Colbert and Randy Feitner and everybody, look, if Ben wants to play 5, 6, 7, 8 more years, and Ben's playing at Ben Roethlisberger level at 5, 6, 7, 8 more years, you let Ben play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, because that's a known commodity with you, okay? And if that eats into Rudolph's, you know, time time in Pittsburgh, so be it. It's not an either or in this situation here. As long as your franchise quarterback is playing by a like a franchise quarterback, then you keep him. Instead of going to an unknown there. So this is not an either or. But on the flip side, I think you do kind of have to be careful with him. You know, as far as extending him too far and being too married to him, because you could collapse your whole cap, you know, if this thing goes south in a hurry with him, you know. And, you know, he's no spring chicken either. So yeah.
And that's why I think if they do an extension, it's going to be a 1 or 2 year, probably two if I had to guess, year extension, because it's going to be more short term. You can lower the signing bonus because it's a short term deal. You know, the odds of getting that base salary is high. And I just think he's earned the right to be able to control his contract process. And a franchise tag does not let him control that process. He's just a bystander, essentially, while the team does what it wants. And I just don't think that's a healthy way to go about it. And again, I say, what quarterback at Ben's caliber has ever gotten, you know, tagged that's at this point in his career with a good relationship? Kirk Cousins, that was a bad relationship. I don't really count that. So, you know, Breeze, it didn't even happen with Breeze or other guys like in that caliber.
All right. So this is going to definitely be, you know, over the course of, let's see, here we are in June. I mean, less than a year. I mean, easily we're going to have, I think, our answer on what they're going to do with them. Personally, I would have liked to seen them maybe try to get it done with him. You know, looking back at it now, getting something done with him, you know, before the start, you know, before paying him this year's $5 million roster bonus. Go ahead and get the deal done with him now and extend him out a little bit. And then, of course, but then on the flip side, you know, they didn't know they were going to draft, you know, Rudolph was going to be there, blah, blah, blah. I understand when you look back at Kevin Colbert's comments at the owners' meeting, they all make a lot of sense now. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really do. And look, if here's a worst case scenario with Rudolph, you hope that he's a quality number two for you his entire career. And, you know, if Ben's still in town by the time his rookie contract's up, well, then you just go back to the draft, try to find another one.
It's a good problem to have. My last thought on Ben, Dave, just to kind of give some more ammunition to what you were talking about with getting a deal done likely before the start of the new league year. In 2008, he signed a 6-year deal on March 3rd. In 2015, he signed a 4-year deal on March 13th. So you're looking before new league year for any sort of long-term deal, not before camp or something like that.
Right, right. That's why I keep throwing out the March date, and especially when you consider I don't know if it's right at the start of the new league year or if it's 5 days into it or 3 or 5 days into it that the $5 million roster bonus is due to him. But, you know, it's definitely right around in there. So, you know, look, I mean, it's something – you know, it's not something we're going to talk a lot about, a lot more about moving forward into this season, for obvious reasons, because there's really no reason to. But I mean, what happens if, God forbid, he misses 2 or 3 games, you know, 4 games, you know, this season with minor injuries or whatnot? Does that change any of this?
No, if it's not minor, it's just about his play. If his play's still good, even if he is getting dinged up, it's not changing anything for me.
I think since Rudolph's been drafted, I think people want other people to be in either in the either or category, and I think you can be in both. I think you don't run the franchise quarterback out of town while he's playing well. End of story. And I don't think the Steelers are going to do that. But I mean, he's not going to play forever. I mean, how surprised would you be if he plays 5 more seasons?
5? I'd be pretty surprised.
Including this one coming up.
I mean, that's still putting Moodle's age 41 season. That's pushing it pretty good.
Realistically, how much longer do you think he plays? 3?
Yeah, I was thinking 3 through his age 39 season, I think maybe. But, I mean, again, I think he is sincere when he says he's truly taking it year to year. In a sense, he's committing long term, but he knows it just, you know, things could change so much, a concussion, a bad injury. I mean, that could, you know, change the game. So I think 3 is reasonable.
Right. So let him play this year, let him play the next year, then franchise him and say, then you want to play a fourth one? Come on back. We'll pay you whatever the increase over the tag
$75 million by the time quarterback values in 2021. Can you imagine what they're going
to
be?
Well, no, his tag, you know, back-to-back tags works off the increase of the last year's number. I know.
I'm being a little jokey right now.
But, I mean, it might. I mean, we don't know what the tag number is going to be, but, you know, in the next couple years. But, I mean, you know, $70 million for back-to-back tags probably isn't unthinkable total, you know.
Not a bad living, is it?
Right. Yeah, I don't see – I just don't see where you're disrespecting them.
Can't you just do a series of one-year deals where you actually come together and just negotiate it?
Well, franchise tag is a one-year deal.
Yeah, but it's not a negotiation.
Okay.
All right. Why can't you do that? I mean, that's you know, possible.
Okay. All right. Plenty of time to worry about it. David and I will probably have this conversation once or twice more from here on out as well, too. But look, nothing wrong with what Ben said, you know. And look, you know, like it or not, some of these offensive linemen that he's talking a lot about might not be here. I mean, there's no reason to think Pouncey's probably not going to get extended, you know, before his ends, right?
The only concern with Pouncey is just that injury history. I don't know if it shortens the longevity of his career. And center typically isn't a position where guys go as long as some of the other spots in the offensive line. So, I mean, his play is still strong, and obviously if that's the case, he's going to stick around. But I wonder about that. This guy that had 7 knee surgeries at one point, that's going to catch up to you soon enough.
And, I mean, we already talked about Foster. I mean, the time is ticking for Foster.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then, I mean, David DeCastro is obviously going to be, we hope, around for quite a while longer. Villanueva probably got a good shot at playing out his contract. Gilbert's going to be interesting. I really think that this season's a very key season for Marcus Gilbert. And, I mean, you know, Chooks is coming along, hopefully, you know, as well. So, I don't know. I just, the way people were interpreting those quotes, it really kind of, I guess, set me off there. But, all right, let's move on here. What other angle did we want to talk about? Let's go this way. Speaking of the top 100 players that was on last night, did you watch the entire segment?
For Ben?
No, the entire.
No, I didn't watch. I didn't watch a second of it. Actually, when it played.
All right, Luke Kuechly was in there. When I mention the name Luke Kuechly, what comes to mind?
One of the best linebackers in the NFL, and every down guy who's had the concussion problems. But I mean, he is the gold standard for off ball linebacker.
Do you view Luke Kuechly as a highly uber athletic player?
I mean, I think, you know, people look at him and say he's probably not a great athlete, but I think he tested like insanely out of Boston College, right? Do you know his numbers? I'll look them up.
Well, they weren't bad.
I mean,
they weren't Ryan Shazier, I don't think, but
I think they were really good. I'm pulling it up now, though. Yeah, they were amazing. At 6'3", 242, he ran a 4.58, jumped 38 in the vert, 10.3 in the broad, 27 on the bench, a 6.92 three cone. I mean, that is. It's not necessarily Shazier, but it's darn close.
When I think of Luke Kuechly, I think of what an incredibly smart player. And what got me kind of thinking about him is, and I highly suggest, Alex, you and everybody listening, go and find that quick clip on him from last night. Boy, you want to talk? They have a few segments or a few clips in there on the field, mic'd up of him just literally just calling out what the offense is going to do. Now I know that's not unique to Luke Kuechly. It's just that got magnified. But if I had to guess, he's probably one of the smartest inside linebackers currently in the league. Would you agree?
Yep, that's fair.
And you know, you hear his teammates talk about just how much you know tape study he puts in and during a week, and just how smart of a player he is, and that allows when a player knows what's happening across from them, it allows them to play that much faster. on top of it. I guess where I'm going with this and where my train of thought was is, how many just defensive players as a whole, not only with the Steelers and league-wide, but how many do you think actually put in the necessary required study time during a week, and how many actually know how to study tape right?
That's a pretty in-depth, heavy question, Dave.
Sure,
The optimist in me says it's a high percentage. It's not going to be everybody, obviously, but I mean, it just depends how you define that, too. I mean, what's enough for one guy? Maybe another guy doesn't have to do as much because nature of the position, the scheme, whatever. I mean, Luke Kuechly's got to look at it more than Tyson Alulu does, or Javon Hargrave might have to. So I like to think it's a good chunk, though. It's their job. It's what they get paid to do.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder how much time these guys put in the film room. And look, I mean, it goes to coaching, too. Coaches, if coaches do enough legwork in there, they're hopefully able to, help their key defensive players identify things. That's things you and I have done in the past or tried to, look, we've seen this formation here, when they do this, a lot of times they're going to do this, and if we can do it, you would think that, exponentially on the other end, someone who's its job to do it, they're doing as well too. But it's just one of the things that stuck out to me that I think that separates Luke Kuechly from a lot of the linebackers in the league is just his ability. He's so damn smart.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. And yeah, I don't think you can be a great player without that kind of, high football IQ and just innate knowledge and feel for the game. And that goes back to your tape study and the work you put in Monday through Saturday. So yeah, I mean, it's certainly a huge component. And I think you think most of the Steelers are guys that put in that work, right? Are you implying anything else?
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering. There's, how smart of an X's and O's guy do you view Ryan Shazier as being?
I think he's pretty. He's been the leader, the communicator. I think again, it goes back to guys that to be in that role and to do it well, you have to be someone that's big in the tape. And Shazier's a guy that is a football junkie. He talked about, I think Jerry Olszewski was talking about the other day on Steelers.com, that Shazier's motivation is going back and watching the tape and highlights of the great linebackers in every era and wanting to be one of those guys. So I think, that shows kind of how much he loves football. And I have to think that he's probably a big tape junkie, too.
And Tyler Matakavis, too. Do you think that is what allowed him at Temple to be kind of the player that he was?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know too much about kind of his tape dedication, but I assume it's pretty good because it's certainly not the athletic tools that allows them to make plays. It's got to be everything else to make up for it.
It's going, because I know you want to talk quickly about the inside linebackers here, and look, John Bostic is viewed as a smart player as well too. I think one thing that stuck out to me, I think I said this the other day, when just looking at his pass coverage from times he was targeted last year with the Colts. The thing that stuck out to me is how he you couldn't obviously hear him, but you could see the hand gestures. You could see him going up to the line and kicking the defensive lineman over and that kind of thing. He comes off, his tape comes off as him being a highly educated X's and O's guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, leader of the position, three down guy, green dot. I mean, those are requirements to play the position and in that specific role. And he's just a guy you see on tape, just route recognition. We talked about this last time, if number two goes out, he's expecting a crosser coming back at him. He knows where he's reading, the route of the tight end down the seam. If he starts to chop down, he knows, it's going to be a curl route driving the football. He gets good depth in zone coverage. So, that helps him mask some of the athletic limitations he has. I view him as a pretty bright guy.
All right, where'd you want to go with the linebackers?
Well, I mean, I think it's more if we've gotten in the OTAs and minicamp, there's been at least a realization that it's not a slam dunk that Bostic's going to be the guy, or at least not handed the inside linebacker job right away. Now, I still believe Bostic's going to be the week one starter, but it's certainly more of a debate now. So I wanted to ask you, Dave, if you're opinion on the Mac linebacker spot has changed. Do you think Tyler Medikevich has a legit shot, or do you think Bostic's still going to comfortably take the reins at some point during camp?
They're going to make him earn it, and I think it's a tip of the hat. I think they're giving the tip of the hat to Maticavage. Obviously, been around there. You know, and to hear some, you know, Jerry Osofsky. I mean, he's made some plays this offseason, albeit in shorts. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's his job to lose, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, no, I tweeted this out the other day, and it's kind of why I wanted to bring it up again. I might do an article on it, but, you know, although I think Bostic's going to eventually win the job, I think Maticavage, as you hinted at, Dave, has earned the right to at least get that opportunity and get that longer look from the coaching staff, because they didn't get to have it last year because of the torn labrum that Maticavage, you know, had to suffer through. And that, you know, he's earned that right, and Bostic, as a new guy, has to earn the trust of the coaching staff and, you know, show that he can play. A lot of these new guys don't get, you know, thrown in right away. You look at the free safety spot when Morgan Burnett was banged up for, I think, one or two practices of minicamp. It was not Terrell Edmunds who stepped in at safety. It was Jordan Dangerfield, because he's the veteran guy. He's earned that right temporarily. So I think it's a similar situation. But I do think that there's more of a legit question than I thought there would be of Maticavage beating Bostic for that starting job.
I keep going back to last year when Shazier went down. Now, obviously, we thought at the time, not long after that, when Maticavage was in there and then the arm just gave way, we thought that was when he suffered the injury, but come to find out, we just didn't learn until just a few weeks ago. It was actually the game against Kansas City earlier in the season that he suffered that injury and all. And props to him to be able to just play through that, even if it was just on special teams. But I keep going back and wondering how things would have turned out had Maticavage been healthy. After Shazier went down, would it have made a damn bit of difference in the game against Jacksonville?
I think probably not. Probably would not have made much of a difference.
Would a guy like Bostic have made a damn bit of difference?
Again, not enough to change the outcome, I don't think. Now, Sean Spence was brutal in that game, and I think Bostic and Maticavage would have been better, but I don't know if it would have been enough.
It still makes you wonder why the heck, I mean, in certain situations, why, you know, Fort wasn't used. And boy, what a damning thing. Now, he did play. Don't get me wrong. Fort did play, but it was strictly, I think, sub package. We know you're going to pass downs, you know.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest mistakes they made, and this is hindsight, so it is easier for us to say, but to sign Sean Spence, not give Fort the opportunity, because I think Spence was obviously an unmitigated disaster, and I think Fort could have, you know, provided a real difference.
A real difference, or
well, okay, yeah, that's probably me being too strong, but he would have been he was the better option, and they just chose the worst option of the two. They chose a guy off the street who hadn't played. And they instead of the guy that they had in camp had been highly conditioned, but the better athlete, and I don't understand the thought process behind.
Yeah,
that.
And that still kind of bugs me as well. You know, yeah, go with.
I mean, they put boats inside before they would go with Ford. Again, it's weird.
And that's ugly.
Yeah.
No offense, but just Moats, and we talked about this leading up. Moats just had not. Moats in a 4-3, you know, held his own. Inside, you know, back when he was with Buffalo, but how many years ago has that been, you know?
Yeah, like 2012.
I mean, you just don't take a guy from the outside that's been, you know, mainly on the outside and throw him into the inside, you know, and the fact that he was getting snaps, that's just something that's mind-boggling on top of everything else there.
For a team to have a next man up mentality to go with every other option before LJ Fort seems counterintuitive.
And that really makes me kind of wonder about Fort's roster spot this year, you know?
Yeah. I mean, his value is going to be, again, primarily special teams, and he is a good special teamer.
Right. He was better last year, I think, was his best year.
He just got good hand use because he's a natural edge guy, and it helps you get, you know, shed blocks and coverage.
You know, that's a guy, and I don't think I put him on my. And I guess that's a perfect time to kind of segue here. Man, my computer's slow here this morning. To my 53-man roster, my first 53-man or second 53-man roster prediction of the offseason. Now that the offseason practices are over, I released it yesterday, Monday, and not too many changes on it, which, you know, probably not a surprise. While I try to get it pulled up here, what are your overarching thoughts on it?
I think it was a good list. I mean, again, there aren't going to be any major disagreements. I mean, again, not a lot has changed. I mean, you know, obviously you don't have Gerald Hawkins anymore, so that's going to create a change on the offensive line. I know you put Jake Rogers on there as the ninth guy. I'd have to wait till preseason. I'm far from convinced that Rogers is going to make it. Everything else, though, you know, I pretty much agreed with. You know, it sounds like Arthur Motes is not going to come back, so that's going to create another opportunity at the outside linebacker spot. You had Adeniyi, the undrafted kid from Toledo, on there. I think it was a wholly agreeable list.
There's no reason right yet to bring Motes back, right?
No, and I think it hasn't happened yet, and I think that one of the beat guys said they don't expect it to happen, so I'm not expecting it to happen anymore.
Right. I mean, I think unless you had a couple of injuries, you know, there's no reason to do that. The thing, look, Rogers, talking about Jake Rogers, the only reason he's on there, only reason I put him on there as a ninth is because of the fact that they sure did keep him around or close by last year on the practice squad. And, yeah. You know, now they obviously have had signed Bryce Harris recently, who's got some NFL experience. You know, R.J. Prince, the undrafted free agent out of North Carolina, been some rumblings about him a little bit. But if you keep nine and you don't keep Jake Rogers, who's your choice?
Well, I for me, and I haven't made an updated list yet, I probably am not keeping nine because I have to go to the preseason and someone's got to prove that they're worthy of that ninth spot, and there's just too many unknowns right now. So, I mean, if you made me keep nine, I'd probably go Bryce Harris just because he does have that experience and he can play both tackle spots. And I mean, Rogers can too, but he doesn't have the NFL experience. But I just think you keep eight. I think guys got to earn those spots.
Filer's a lock, right?
Yeah, Filer, with the Hawkins injury, Filer's a lock.
And we know
BJ, and Munchak was talking him up the other day too.
We know BJ Finney. I mean, barring injury, we know who eight of these guys are going to be.
Those eight are locks. A Finney, Filer, a core four, locks.
So the question now becomes: is it eight or is it nine? And if it's nine, who's the ninth? And that's really in so many words. I think that's where I'm at on my 53. All right, reading through it: Roethlisberger, Landry Jones, Mason Rudolph. You know, unless Rudolph shows that he can be the number two and you have a lot of confidence in him, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's, you know, probably not impossible, as I like to say, but, you know, you would think Landry Jones is going to play out his final year. Running backs, Le'Veon Bell, James Conner, Jalen Samuels. You know, I see some people talking about, well, why not keep a fourth and maybe keep one less wide receiver? To keep a fourth running back, what is the let's assume that Bell, Connor, and Samuels are there. What is the value of keeping another one like a Ridley or somebody else? Because you're not going to dress all four of those every week.
No, but I mean, you can make that argument about the 53rd guy on any spot. You're not dressing Jake Rogers any week, so, you know. I mean, you can make that argument anywhere.
Right, sure.
And I guess the idea would be that if Bell were to go down, it's going to be all hands on deck. Because none of those guys are bell cows. You're going to need committee. All three guys are obviously going to dress. And so, you know, you could use all the help you could get at running back.
We'll come back. I want to make sure we hit the Jalen Samuels topic here in just a little bit. Roosevelt Nix. he'll be there, barring anything catastrophic happening. The wide receivers, that's an interesting discussion here. I mean, I wouldn't bet my house on the six that I have. That's for damn sure. Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Washington are obviously locks. You can make arguments that pass there, though. There are some questions.
Yeah, I wouldn't say DHB is a lock in the same way that Juju and AB and James Washington are, but I think he's really close. I did an article yesterday on Steelers Depot talking about the value that he brings and everything he does on and off the field. It's pretty rare to find, and with how kind of thin the depth is, I'd be surprised if he's cut. I assume Eli's going to come back at some point, so that's fine. I like Marcus Tucker a lot. I mean, you know, you're just basically arguing Tucker versus Justin Hunter versus keeping five, but I think Tucker's a fine route to go.
You could theoretically see this team keep five, though.
Yeah, sure.
And not six. It's either going to be five or six. It's not going to be four, right?
Yeah, it's not four or seven or anything crazy like that. It's five or six.
All right, and, you know, there's been such the buzz about what a huge letdown it'll be if Marcus Tucker doesn't make it this year with all the offseason buzz, right?
Yeah, I mean, we have to, you know, temper expectations a little bit. I think there's kind of that offseason boredom that turns into hype about certain guys. I like Tucker. I think he's got a good chance to make it. But, I mean, we have to understand that, it you know, we're talking about a six receiver here, not a day one starter.
Is Hunter somebody that you maybe can trade for a bologna sandwich?
Not even a bologna sandwich. No. I think he's either you cut him or you keep him.
Right. Okay, tight ends. And the Jake McGee injury really – not that this wasn't cleared up beforehand, but I had a little bit of high hopes for Jake McGee, but it should be three: Jesse James, Vance McDonald, and Xavier Grimble, barring something happen. If something does happen to one of those three at this point, you're probably going outside, right?
Yeah, I mean, the other options are pretty thin. Farrah McKevitt would be the other guy in-house you look at.
And they did bring back Mallett.
Mallett, yep.
Recently, but I mean, his ceiling isn't very high there. Okay, so I have 25 on offense. The 25 on defense really matches my last set of 25. Sans, no, I'm trying to think if I changed anything out this time. I don't think I did. I think the only changes I had on this group of 53 was that no Hawkins and no Jake McGee, and I replaced those with Jake Rogers and Xavier Grimble. Six defensive linemen, you know, the question becomes, I think, is it Joshua Frazier? Is it Daniel McCullers? Or is it Greg Gilmore? To me, that's where the question mark is.
Yeah, no, I think that's the obvious question. And it's also those three versus outside the organization as well. I mean, if someone's got to step up there, you want someone to step up there. But it's not a guarantee. I went Gilmore in my last one, my first roster prediction, but Frazier, the draft pick. I mean, that makes sense as well.
All right, inside linebacker, is it going to be four or is it going to be five? I think that's the big question. We know Bostic, we know Williams, we know Tyler Matakavage. You know, a lot of buzz about Matthew Thomas. L.J. Fort still hanging around. You know, is it four or is it five? And you wouldn't think Keith Kelce, you know, would be in the mix, right?
Yeah, it's tough for me to justify cutting Fort, though, because he is a good special teams player. I'm not convinced that Thomas will be a great one out of the gate. He's got the athletic profile, but I worry about some of the lapses and kind of concentration in some of his reads that could hurt him. And, yeah, I'd probably disagree. I think Fort will and should make it.
Is Matthew Thomas going to end up being the guy during the preseason that fans say, you can't cut him, he won't clear and make it to the practice squad?
Probably, because I think he'll make some splash plays, but I think he'll make as many bad plays as good ones, which is kind of what happened at Florida State. I think Thomas could make the roster. I'm not trying to dog him, but I don't know if you cut Fort to keep Thomas. I think you try to get both on the roster if you can swing it.
So you can theoretically see five.
Yep. You can see five, too. I mean, you have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not discounting it.
Okay.
You know, it would be, according to my 53, it'd be either one less wide receiver or one less offensive lineman to make room for it. I think that's where the position group numbers, really is going to be the biggest thing to try to whittle down here. And outside linebackers, God, I hope they don't keep four. Just four.
Yeah, you have Keon Adams and Adenier as your last two. Adenier, though, I don't think he's going to be a good special teams player. I don't think he's got the movement ability. I think he's a good pass rusher. I think he's going to offer you very little on special teams. It's my concern.
Right, and that's definitely going to be something to watch. And look, Adams and Adenier are two that, You know, we're all penciling in Keon Adams right now, but
right.
You know, would you bet the house on it? You know,
no, he's not. He's never taken a preseason snap. So how can you bet the house on anything like
right.
that?
Right. So, but you know, past Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, and Anthony Ciccolo, you know, there's still some things to be worked out there. And we've seen this team only keep four before. And you know, if there is one position you could see the team adding to from this point forward, you know, maybe a cut, you know, a final cut from another team, whatnot. Outside linebacker could be it.
Yeah, it's bad. I did an article this morning on Anthony Ciccolo, and I went through all of his pass rushers last year, and I was even surprised how bad of a pass rusher he looked. I have the whole article there that kind of delves into it. So it's a trouble spot. John Simon from the Colts could be an option. They're playing a 4-3. He's kind of miscast in that role. He's not starting. He's got a bigger contract, so that's a guy that could get cut that the Steelers could look at. They brought him in for a visit years ago coming out of Ohio State. Good run defender, not a great pass rusher, but decent enough.
If he ends up getting cut and signed with the Steelers, do I get kind of like partial credit for my mock draft several years ago?
Yeah, retroactive will grandfather in that mock draft day for you.
I really liked him coming out, and I think Dick LeBeau did too. I think Dick LeBeau was still around at the time, you know, coming out of Ohio State there. So, yeah, I mean, look, I mean, that's one name definitely to watch, I think, is Simon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Shane Ray, like I said, that's out the window because his wrists are apparently fried, so no dice there.
All right, you don't see, I mean, five cornerbacks, five safeties sound right?
Yeah, I think it's at least 10, potentially 11 because, you know, teams are going more and more DBs, but 10 is solid.
And, you know, obviously the five cornerbacks, Artie Burns, Joe Hayden, Mike Hilton, Cameron Sutton, Brian Allen, five safeties, Morgan Burnett, Sean Davis, Nat Burry, Terrell Edmonds, and Marcus Allen. Obviously the specialists I have are easy to pick out, the incumbents there. The only thing is and that I don't like about this 53 that I put together is I have all the draft picks making the 53, and the you know, it just that's a rarity.
Yeah, that's why. That's one reason why I had Frazier off my last one, my first 53-man roster, because you're right. It just, I mean, injuries can happen, and they're unpredictable, and that has wiped out some of the draft classes from making it before. But I think Gilmore's got a shot, because I think Gilmore's got more versatility. He's a longer guy. He can play in. He can probably play some nose, and Frazier's just a strict kind of throwback one tech.
One more I did on that, and it relates to a post I had yesterday. Is boy, and just because the off season practices are over, you could probably go back. I started 2011 was a strike year, so it was hard. Or, I mean, the lockout year, so it was hard to, you know, you obviously didn't have the off season practices to judge who was there and then who was added after the fact. But I know even going back as far as 2010, Flozo Adams was signed well after the off season practices ended. And my point of that whole article is every year dating back to at least 2012, a player has been on the Steelers week one 53-man roster. At least two players have been on the Steelers week one 53-man roster that did not partake in any of the offseason practices.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. Now, I mean, I know in your article, you know, Eli Rogers could technically be counted for this year because he didn't participate in OTAs, but could it be someone, a whole new name, which is certainly possible.
Yeah, could it be the John Simon, you know? Yeah. I mean, if you like the chances of it being at least one this year, right?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the history says it. Usually they do something, and they've been more aggressive in camps with trades. So, I mean, they've been trade happy the last, really, 2-3 years in camp. It's been pretty busy.
All right, let's end it. I don't know. We're probably going to run a little bit long here for just a minute, but I want to go back and talk about Jalen Samuels. We've had a lot of talk about him, what he is and isn't, and what he might and what he needs to work on. You know, pass protection. Look, one thing I want to know. I want you to make sure you get those binoculars out when those backs on backers drills get going at Latrobe to see how Jalen Samuels does. And obviously, when we get into the preseason games here. I hope they put him in a lot of those situations where he has to identify and pick up some of those guys. And more than likely, he's going to be part of a unit that's going to include Mason Rudolph and Landry Jones and those kind of things. So I really look forward to seeing that. But, you know, I see a lot of people bullish on Jalen Samuels, and I get it. I really do. If anybody should get it, I should, because I've gone back and watched every rush and every pass reception of his during at least his final two seasons to see how he was used, and he really is that Swiss Army knife type of guy. But with that said, he was a fifth round draft pick for a reason. We've talked, you know, obnoxiously about whether or not he can pick up, whether or not he can block, and what he can do without the football in his hands. But how bullish are you on Jalen Samuels' rookie season? Assuming he makes the 53, you know, one, if I threw out the stat, all right, Jalen Samuels, if he makes the 53, true or false, he will have both 100, he will exceed 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving during his rookie season, or false?
That's tough. I'm going to say no, though, say no.
But, I mean, it doesn't sound like a daunting number, though, does it? 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving for a guy that proved he could do both in, you know, at the college level. Yeah, Le'Veon Bell, the starter, blah, 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 going to get 90% of the snaps. James Conner going to get some. But when you look at just the raw, I don't know. Here's what made me think about that.
Mm-hmm.
I started, and this is where I went down my own rabbit hole. Can one go down one's own rabbit hole?
You're all zen on me now, Dave.
What's the old saying, Caddyshack, about a donut without a hole is just a Danish?
Dave, you're trying to quote Caddyshack. How old do you think I am? Come on, man.
Yeah. I was trying to think to myself, you know, it just started to wonder what's too bullish when it comes to Jalen Samuels and his production in his rookie season, assuming he makes the 53. And I thought, well, you know, 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving doesn't seem, you know, all that big and daunting or whatnot. And I wonder how many people, if I threw it out there, would take the over of both. And then it hit me. I wanted to know, how many times has a Steelers running back drafted after the third round eclipsed 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving during his rookie season? And, you know, your mind instantly goes to maybe Bam Morris and Barry Foster. Then you realize the round that they were drafted. Remember, after the third round, a rookie running back during his a running back during his rookie season being able to eclipse 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving. It's mind blowing. Anyway, I know what the answer is because you read Twitter last night. But would you have ever guessed it was Rich Ehrenberg?
Never. Could have given me 100 guesses. Would not have. I don't even know who that is. Because I was trying to think. I saw your question before I saw the answer. I was trying to go through names. I was like, Amos Irway, but I was like, no, he's a third round pick. He didn't play his rookie year. I took a wild guess at Sidney Thornton, but he was a second round pick, so I would have had no idea.
And what did he even? He didn't even crack it.
No, he didn't. He didn't. I think he had the rushing, but not the receiving. But I was wrong.
You have to go all the way back to 1984 with Rich Ehrenberg out of Colgate, not the toothpaste, Alex.
Oh, thanks.
out of Colgate, 405 rushing yards in 1984, and he had 38 receptions for a Steelers running back in 1984. That was probably monumental. 358 yards receiving. And the thing is about Ehrenberg is he was part of like a three running back, three-headed monster that the Steelers had right from the get-go during the 1984 season. So it wasn't like injury immediately played into it. They got him kind of integrated in that offense right away. And I think it was by the fifth or sixth game, I think it was the fifth game of the season of 1984, he had eclipsed both 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving. Is that, I know it's a meaningless kind of cherry pick stat, but is that pretty mind blowing?
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected it to be that long ago. I'm curious how other teams kind of stack up. But you know, that's just, I think that just kind of says how difficult it can be. And that's why I guess I said no. I probably would have said yes until I learned this stat that you had tweeted out, and kind of saw how high that bar is. And again, you know, with Bell playing 90% of the snaps that he's going to play, and you have James Conner, who I think the team still is high on, and by reports has had just as good of a spring as Jalen Samuels, I think it's going to be tough for Samuels. He'll do one, but I don't know if he'll get both categories.
So you think he'll exceed either 100 yards in either rushing or receiving, but not both?
Yeah, and if I had to guess, I'm going to say it's receiving, actually, because I think he's going to get most of his use out of the slot on third downs and some of that, you know, different personnel groupings they bring in.
You know, surprisingly, too, when you put in, and if my computer wasn't having issues this morning, I'd pull up the complete list of names for you, but and it's short. In the modern era, talking about Super Bowl era from 66 on, the list of Steelers running backs during their rookie season to exceed both 100 yards rushing and 100 yards receiving during a rookie season is, and by players actually drafted by the Steelers, is extremely low. I mean, obviously you have Bell, Franco Harris.
Is this regardless of round?
Regardless of round.
Okay. I'll pull up the list here.
Right.
It's Bell, Franco Harris, Ehrenberg, Bam Morris, Randall Ells? No, is that right?
He was a wide receiver. I'm talking about running backs.
Well, sure. Yeah, he's on the list. And then Tim Worley is the other one, first round pick in 89. And that's it.
And then Ehrenberg.
Yeah, Ehrenberg, yeah.
Now, there was a running back, I think, in 66 that'll show up in there, but he was actually drafted by the Falcons and then released. Trying to recall that fellow's name. But he wasn't actually drafted by the Steelers. But
Don Shy or Willie Asbury?
Asbury. Yeah, he was drafted by the Falcons, I think, in 66. I don't have it in front of me.
Yep. You know you're Willie Asbury. Good job.
Yeah, only because, look, the older you get, the more you're going to start doing this. Going back to, and look, I was heavily medicated in the 80s, so going back and relearn, I'm basically having to go back and relearn some of this stuff because I had some lost years in there.
that keeps your youth. That's how you keep your youthful self.
Yeah, right.
So just eliminate those years in your.
Yeah, go back and rewatch. But look, I'm gonna go. You know what? I'm going to do over the next few weeks. I'm gonna go back and watch some 1984 tape on Rich Ehrenberg because I got a slew.
Why?
Why not? That's the answer to that question. But I mean, you just read off the names. Are you surprised how low that list is for the Steelers?
Yeah, considering, I mean, that's since 66, and to have how many names were on that list? Eight, and Randall Ells doesn't count, so that's seven. I mean, Don Shy in 67, Asbury in 66, they barely even count. So basically, since the Knoll era, it's been four, Bell, Ehrenberg, Harris, and Tim Worley.
Now, Chris Rainey, a few years ago, people were answering with Chris Rainey, but he missed it on the receiving side, I think, by 40 yards. I think what did Rainey have during his rookie season receiving yards-wise, like 60 yards?
He had 60 yards. Dave, you're a savant when it comes to obscure Steelers running backs.
Yes, definitely 60 yards. Definitely 60 yards.
Is that a Rain Man you're doing right now?
Yeah, I forgot that movie was probably made before you were born, too.
It was, but I get the reference.
I guess what I'm getting at is maybe don't be too bullish on Jalen Samuels this year, right?
Yeah, and then obviously some other guys could have made, you know, if Ray Lewis didn't break Rashard Mendenhall's shoulder, he would have done it. So, I mean, there's always, you know, those things that happen. But yeah, it's just a realization that, you know, Samuels is going to likely be the number three. You know, Bell's still going to be the guy. And whether he's on the last year of his deal or on a long-term deal, they're going to, you know, use him pretty hard because he's getting paid. Either you've committed to him long-term and you're going to play him as such, or he's in the last year of his deal and you say, screw it, he's not our problem after this year. Let's just, you know, run the wheels off of him. So it's just going to be tough for Samuels to get that play time to reach those numbers.
More total yards in 2018 between James Conner, total yards from scrimmage between James Conner and Jalen Samuels.
That's
is that a good is that a good question?
It's a good question. I'm gonna say Samuels just because he's a receiver and receivers are gonna have better chances to get more yards. But that's a really good question, Dave. I'd have to think about it some more.
Will it be close?
Yeah, I think it'll be close. I think Connor's going to have more on the ground, and Samuels is going to have more through the air. Just kind of, what do you think is going to be the higher volume?
Will either exceed 300 total yards from scrimmage?
Well, I said no to Samuels on 100-100, so that'd be no. And I don't think
Connor's... Well, you did say that you thought he might have more receiving yards than rushing yards. So.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be...
What if I gave you 200 over-under... yards from scrimmage on either. Will either of those two, barring injury, of course. I mean, we always have to throw that out. People say, you didn't say, well, but
I'll say yes to Samuels. Connor's going to be close because I think he's going to give you just nothing as a receiver. He'll give you it as a runner. Can he get 200 rushing? I think both could do it. They'd be really close. I think Samuels has a better shot than Connor.
All right, that's
But we're splitting hairs at this point. I mean, who knows?
Sure, sure. And look, so I mean, you know, Samuels one of several, several again this year that are going to be fun for you to watch and report on at Latrobe. Boy, have I watched a lot of Oklahoma State tape lately. You know, and look, since the draft, I've already watched, you know, the last two seasons of Oklahoma State, but I Oklahoma State games kind of on speed watch, though. You know how we do on these. But now I'm going back and I'm really, really detailing and actually I'm contextualizing right now every throw that Mason Rudolph made last season, and it's going up by game. I understand why such posts are not going to get a lot of comments, but I think we're getting a little bit of traffic to those. And in case you have not noticed, if you see those posts, you can click on each one of the contextual descriptions and go to each play that I'm linking there for yens to see. It really is an enjoyable process, and it just goes to, you know, it just reconfirms. Here's the things that stuck out to me. Boy, they sure did move fast on offense. I mean, they move fast, Chip Kelly fast in that offense there. Obviously, a lot of shotgun. Obviously, RPO city, man. I mean, run pass options out the yin-yang. But he ran that offense well. I mean, he really ran that offense well. And I know, yeah, competition he faced and all like that. But he made a lot of good throws, Alex. And it really is fun to go back through this process with him. And I think the byproduct of this, you know, yeah, if you don't want to read any of the 13 total posts that are going to be in these series, that's fine. But I think you're going to be interested in reading the recap where I drill down all the statistical categories, you know, down in distance and length of passes and yak and all like that for not only him, but you know, by doing this, I'm going to get every target for James Washington along the way there too. So I think that's going to be an interesting byproduct of this. But obviously the big question with Mason Rudolph is how is he going to be able to translate from, you know, a quick paced RPO offense into a more traditional offense.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, didn't work under center at Oklahoma State. Now you're not going to do it a ton in the NFL, but you have to be able to do it when called upon. But, you know, from everything we've heard from Rudolph, from his coaches, you know, Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and others, is that his work ethic is super high. He loves football. He's not a guy that's going to be an issue going out, partying, anything like that. So, you know, if it's a guy who's going to be able to work at it, it's him.
All right. Boy, I think we filled this podcast up. Anything else to add? Anything you're looking forward to doing the rest of the week here, Steelers-wise?
Trying to find something to write about. We are now officially in the dead zone out of minicamp. Hopefully going to try to do some Steelers interviews. I got some guys I want to talk to. So next couple weeks, hopefully we can get something like that going.
All right. In the meantime, we'll see if David's able to join me on Friday. But you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Kozora at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do, if you like our rambling, if you'd like to support more rambling, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button, upper right navigational bar. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.